friends, welcome to Pastor Flash's Hour of Reckoning with Organ Leroy at his organ again. And the 50-voice St. Louis Aquarium Choir. I'm Deacon E.L. Mouse, but dear friends, in these days of modern time, when you can't tell the ACs from the DCs, well, aren't we all yearning for someone who can turn on a little stopping power? Dear friends, I mean a smoky glass. Don't you think I mean a lightning rod with which to chase these spooks away? Don't you know I mean our own pastor, Rod Flash? He's been up for a week, but he's coming down.
I've never been away myself before in all my life.
Welcome to Comedy on Vinyl, Episode 6. This is Jason Klom. With me, as usual, is Mike Warden.
Hello.
And with me, as not usual, is Jeremy Guskin.
Hi.
That was good.
Thank you.
That's all you got?
I work in radio from time to time.
Oh, you do?
No.
Okay, good. So this week we're going to be doing, on Comedy and Vinyl, which I think I already said, we're doing the Firesign Theater album. You want to say the title? Because I can't remember it.
Yeah, well, you've only gotten it wrong once.
Okay.
Then again, most people do get it wrong. Yeah. I think it's Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers.
Which is brilliant.
It is.
Yeah, so full disclosure, I've heard this album 1.5 times now. And I've only ever heard another Firesign Theater album before this, once or twice.
Nice.
So, my experience is very limited.
It's nice. I'm just kind of finding out that you're running a series of things you haven't heard before.
Yeah, but it's more fun.
I know.
To talk with you.
I mean, you could talk about things that you know about forever, but to really talk intelligently about something you have absolutely no clue about,
right,
that takes, you know...
Genius.
Or balls. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say balls.
Balls.
You can say fuck. You can say titty.
Let's not ruin them all, then.
Titty?
I'll figure it out.
But you have to say it like that.
That's
titty.
Okay.
Titty.
Don't give me an elocution lesson when it comes to saying breast words. I got it.
Okay.
I got
all
plenty
right.
of practice.
Fine. Okay. So why is this album... Tell the people what you do, and then I'm instructing you.
Okay.
Tell the people what you do,
okay,
and then tell me why this is so important to you. Go.
I am an actor and a teacher. I act when people pay me to, and oftentimes when they don't.
Mm.
And I teach at the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts.
That's good.
Yes, it is. It's a great job.
It sounds good.
It is.
They're
very talented youths.
Yeah. Man, what are you getting to teach them about that they've never heard of before? That's got to be the most exciting
What's
thing.
What's a youth?
Say, there it is. I'm going to say ute. But what do I get to teach them about? Well, one of the fun... I actually get to teach in the film department as well as in the theater department. And I teach a history of film class.
Oh.
And it's really great teaching kids about old, classic, great films.
That's so
that,
good.
Of course, they've never seen before.
Right, right.
When you can show, like, a group of 15, 16-year-olds, Citizen Kane, and almost all of them really like it.
Oh.
You know, it's a great position to be
That's
in.
That's
amazing. Because then you can pretty much go on and show anything you want.
Yeah.
So it's it's really great. So that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I also teach the improv and comedy class. I don't think I have any real qualifications in that other than other people find impressive have said that I have some talent at comedy.
Right. But you are a professional actor.
I am a professional actor. I do get paid by people.
I know people confuse that and sometimes think if you're a professional actor, you must be good at improv. But...
No.
But I mean, you teach it.
So I do. And I'm not to say that, again, not to say that I'm good at it, but I'm good enough at it that professionals don't know the difference.
I think if you can act successfully, get paid for it, be funny while you're doing it.
That's what
I think you're fine because the improv rules are mostly bullshit.
Anything that's a rule when you're saying, like, if the rule is, if improv means make it up and... rule means rule, then improv rule means make it up and rule. And that's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
It's three words.
Yeah.
And in and of itself, it wouldn't work, what I'm saying.
Right.
But if you take them as two separate concepts, I think you get what I'm...
I can't. I just deny it. See,
that's nice.
Good. That wasn't a yes and.
But don't do that.
Okay.
That's not funny. I'm sorry. See, and now no one's laughing.
Right.
The three people who were listening are now no longer laughing.
They've already tuned it off.
Really? Well, they heard after Jeremy Guzkin click, and that was it.
Oh.
So anyway, I teach the improv and comedy class, which is also great, and I get to bring up a whole lot of things that they don't know about. You know, some of them do know about Python, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But it's fun telling them that there was an Office before the American version.
Oh, shit. How young are they?
Yeah, well, I mean, not like more than 2001,
right?
I mean, it's scary. That's, I mean, like the day I had students that weren't born in the 80s, it was only in the 90s, I knew like that was it.
Yeah.
And now it's like 95.
Christ.
You know, it's like, you were born after I graduated from college? That is the sad. I didn't think people were allowed to do that.
No, they're not.
They shouldn't.
They're breaking rules.
I agree. So anyway, I suggested this record. So if anybody out there is like, what the hell are they talking about? You can blame me. This is an incredibly important, I think, comedy album. One, I believe Rolling Stone voted it or said it was the best or most important comedy album ever released.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty neat. I know Firesign Theater influenced a whole bunch of different people. They came along right after Python, basically.
Right.
And they're kind of our version of them. And the sad part is that so many more people know about Python than Firesign Theater.
Sure.
And they're all brilliant. You know, the early Firesign Theater stuff is amazing. Now, this is their sort of crowning achievement album.
Yeah.
But I think there are better ones. You know, I think there are other ones that are funnier, to be honest with you. It's like I was saying before, it's like getting into Python through Holy Grail and then realizing later that Life of Brian is a much better movie.
Of course.
Things like that. But this is a classic, and I know it very well, so I won't do lines from it as much as humanly possible.
Okay, that's fine. Why did it, I don't know, as a young kid, what about it struck you? How old were you when you first heard it?
I think I was like 11 or 12. My father is a bit of a weirdo and a bit of an artistic snob.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, he used to, you know, like he'd sit me down and be like, we're going to watch movies. And be like, great. And like today it would be like, Romeo and Juliet. And like maybe your parent would be like, it's based on a play by some dead guy. Then you're like, there's education in it. But my father was like, I mean, he took me to see Fantasia, and like literally people in the theater were telling him to shut up because he was like in my ears, like, this piece of music is by so-and-so. This is Imagerium representing, you know, do you understand who that is? And they correlate, you know, like that's, and that was like when I was four, you know, I didn't even know what the hell he was talking about. That was my dad. I remember, like one of my favorite stories, I think I was six and I went to school, I think it was like for first grade and it was Halloween. And I was dressed as Charlie Chaplin. Uh-huh. And I got mad at my friend Matthew Simon because he didn't know who Charlie Chaplin was. Okay, he was six, all right? It was 1980, I think. I think that's forgivable.
Sure,
For a six-year-old in 1980 to not know who Charlie Chaplin is. But I didn't.
Of course.
As a six-year-old, so there's... So that's what I was, you know, again, that's what I was raised with.
Did you beat him to death with your cane?
No, it was very flimsy.
I
knew that it couldn't really bear any weight.
Right.
Also, if I broke it, I'd have no prop.
Oh,
and that was really important to me at that point.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's the way I was raised. And my father was really, loved introducing me to new things.
Yeah.
He was the one who introduced me to Python.
Awesome.
When I was 10 years old, he made me watch PBS in New York City, which used to show Flying Circus and Fawlty Towers back to back.
Oh, that's right.
And I remember being 9, 10 years old and watching it with my dad and hating Flying Circus.
Uh-huh.
I was like, this is dumb. These people speak like idiots. He's hitting him with a fish. None of this makes any sense. I don't understand why this is even on television. This is like a test. You know what I mean? This is where they show somebody who's on, you know, like as a kid, you're like, this is what being on drugs must be like.
Right.
You know, like this is terrible. But then I would stick around for Fawlty Towers, which I thought was hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, I thought John Cleese beating up this tiny Brazilian man, from Barcelona. It was one of the funniest damn things you could ever see.
Yeah.
And then like 2 years later, or a year and a half later, he sat me down and made me watch Holy Grail,
right.
And of course talked throughout the entire opening credits, saying, can you read at the bottom? You see how it's funny? And even through all of that, I got how good it was, and then I went back and watched all the Flying Circuses, and I'm like, it's brilliant. But around the, a little bit later, my father was really into giving me, like, comedy albums, and he introduced me to the 2000-Year-Old Man, yeah. and, like, and all the classics. But every once in a while, he kind of deviate, and you could tell he asked a friend, like, what's some hip, weird thing kids would like? You know, because, like, my dad was a 40-year-old person when he was, like, 14.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, even nowadays, it's like, well, I thought I'd buy you a music album for your birthday. You know, it's like, and like, not to say that he'd say it that corny, but you know what I mean? Like, it is still that. He's still, you know, like, he'll get things in Cole Porter. But like, can you transfer these to MP3s? Mm-hmm. Is that possible? So, I'm also making him sound like he's from 1938.
Yes, you are, but that's great.
That's not true. Okay. I mean,
yes, he sounds more like this.
That's good. But that's a nice voice.
Yeah, he's got
never heard your father. That's a great impression.
No, thank you.
That was a great impression.
It's really funny. When you do meet him, you're going to laugh your ass off. So yeah, he gave me this album. He shows up with this and we had a turntable and everything else. And I remember looking at the cover of it for a long time.
Yeah, I bet.
And not really understanding. I'm like, they're animals. I don't. And I think my dad, as much as my dad could explain to me, because he actually tried listening to it and couldn't make it through it. He confided in me later. He was like, Jeremy, I couldn't make it through. I don't get it. And I was like, really? Because I couldn't stop listening to it. And again, it was one of those, you know, like for a 12-year-old, you know, like this is what being on drugs must be like. Because I played it on the turntable, lay down on the rug in the den, literally, you know, in my apartment in New York, but still, and literally lay down looking at the ceiling, listening to it, trying to pick out, because you have to listen to this album like four times to get all the stuff that's happening in the background, you know, like all the commercials, the cuts, just some of the references, which you don't even realize they're throwing out until the second or third time.
Right.
So he gave me this album, and I just remember sitting down and listening to it, and it was one of those things that I listened to through completely from beginning to end, and not really laughing at all out loud, just literally just listening to it and trying to understand it. And by the time I got to the end, the only thing I could think to do was put it back on.
Of course, yeah.
And I knew by the second time through it that this was unlike anything I had ever listened to before. Now, is it the greatest comedy album in the world? I don't know. Have I laughed more at other things? Hell yes.
Sure.
But is there something that I recommend to people? And I mean, when I have to talk about like what great or interesting or surprising comedy writing is, this is it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, literally, they will change venue within two sentences. And it's complete. And you don't, and you don't not enter into it. You willingly suspend your disbelief every place they go.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
What is it about an album like this that you just said, you know, you don't laugh out loud? And I don't find myself laughing out loud at it again. But it's still so fucking captivating that I have to keep listening.
And there's so many things that are just so clever in it. You know, like, and there's some things that are absolutely horrible. You know, like in the Porgy Tirebiter song at the beginning of the Howl of the Wolf movie. The Porgy Tirebiter. You know, it's making it sound very doo-woppy and everything else. But they mention, he's at the end of it, he's having sex with their servant. Whose name is Porcelain. And like, as a kid growing up, I didn't realize that it's like a typical Negro servant.
Right.
So it's like when you hear them having sex, and she goes, "Oh, Porgy! Oh my! Oh my! Oh my!" Right. I mean, like, it is awful.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it completely completes the picture. Sure. And I, like, even then, I knew that they were making a comment about it.
Right.
It's, you know, like, and that was funny. You know, and there were other things. And again, this comes from my father's side of the family as far as sense of humor. Also, I have to give big up to both my parents for my sense of humor, because it split almost perfectly in half.
Yeah.
My father is the nerd. He loves puns and, you know, clever wordplay and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons I love Firesign Theater. My mother, on the other hand, loves a big fat person falling down the stairs. You know, because it's timeless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's timeless. And that's it. And so, you know, like, if you can balance the two, you pretty much got everything. And I always thought Firesign Theater, again, like, they're able to, they do a lot of highbrow stuff.
Yeah.
They can get really dirty really quick, again, like with the porcelain thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, and again, like, the wordplay, I love the Department of Redundancy department, department, or in one of my favorite commercials that comes back around a couple of times, the Ersatz Brothers Coffee. The real one. Look for the can in the plain brown can. You know, I mean, like, it assaults you. Yeah. It's like, it's, the closest thing I can ever compare it to, and I've actually tried to do this once or twice, but it's like the season 4, 5, 6, 7 of The Simpsons.
Uh-huh.
It just assaults you with so much, and it just doesn't stop. Like, you have to go back and listen to it again.
Yeah.
You know, like Homer's tirade about the pile of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen to it two or three times to get all the great little subtle nuances in the language.
Right.
And it's the same thing with this. I mean, all this is so much more layered because it doesn't have anything visual to anchor it, so it literally can just fly around.
Have they done anything visual, or are they strictly...
Oh, no, yeah, they've made... Actually, they were showing a movie that they did.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what it was. It was like the, I want to say it was like the Future Adventures of Nick Danger, or, because I actually saw it, and it's like a real, I had a video of it. I think I still have it somewhere. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think,
doesn't
the guy who plays Ogre in the Revenge of the Nerds movies is in it, as of course, as a heavy.
Uh-huh.
And all the Fireside Theater guys are in it, and... I think, and as good as I think almost all of them are, there's a reason why they don't act.
Yeah.
You know, like Phil Proctor, I think has, I mean, I think all of them could work, you know, like on screen anytime they wanted, to be completely honest with you. But I think some of them are just more adept to all of it. You know, like again, like Phil Proctor, you know, he understands, I think he understands a little bit more of, you know, he lets his voiceover career, and all of them should be doing, because I mean, I can tell you at least a dozen people work all the time in voiceover are directly stealing voices from Fireside Theater stuff.
Yeah.
Because I do it, and so I know, I'm like, hey, I remember where I stole that from.
Right.
So, you know, God bless him. Because they're all stealing from Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet and all those greats too, so I mean, it's all good, but you know, it's an imitation of an imitation of an imitation, and then it comes something completely different. You see the movie and you just go, oh, it's... Well, one, the production values aren't great. It's not really well written. They're relying on characters that they've dealt with a lot of things that they don't have to show on screen and, you know, on their radio stuff. So it's not exactly fair, I would say. It's not exactly the Fireside Theater's medium. Mm-hmm. Individually, yeah, they all do really great work. But in that, I don't even know what the name of it is, and I'm bashing it. Yeah, it's not fair. But, I mean, like, again, I'm just such a big fan of all of them. I can do almost no wrong.
Right.
You know, it's like I sat through Larry Crown because I love Tom Hanks. And
still
said, you know, after seeing Bridesmaids, saying, wow, that's the best thing he's been in all year.
Yeah.
You know, and that's mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, wait for Bachelor Party 2.
Mm, boy. Can't wait.
Because I go see it.
I bet you would.
Mm-hmm.
You should be in it.
Or Splashditter.
Splashditter. So wait, okay, so they got started in, let's go a little, we do a little history lesson too. Give me a little history. Mike is looking on the internet.
I love smartphones.
All right, so what does Mike know, and then let's not test Jeremy's knowledge. She knows everything. You fucking
I thought you were wrapping it up. Okay, let's do this. So I'm like, I'll put this away now.
We'll ask Jeremy.
I'll see what I can come up with.
All right, just tell me what you know about it. Because here's the deal. I'm going to sit here, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay, so what I know for a fact is this. This is the Fireside Theater is a group of 17 black women who got together and decided to actually come up with a series of charcoal drawings to depict Moses and the Israelites' escape from Egypt.
Okay.
And what came out of it was the Fireside Theater, which is what we know today.
That is so good.
They met at the Lutheran Church in Chicago, was it?
Who is this?
The
oh, yeah, the 17 women? Yes, of course. Yes, that was them.
How could they not be Lutherans?
Right. I think Ken Kesey's bus drove through the wall. I don't remember. I'll bring up another reference from the time. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Ovaltine.
Ah!
Huh? That's got to fit in there somewhere.
I'm sure it does.
Or maybe a dirigible.
It's delicious.
No, I'm going
they
back
co-wrote
to
They co-wrote the screenplay Zachariah.
In
1971.
Zachariah?
Don't know that.
Yeah.
Barely knew her.
It was inspired by the novel Siddhartha.
Siddhartha.
Barely knew her.
Oh, see, this is one of the things that I am quite adept at doing. Siddhartha. Study of Buddha.
You've gotten paid good money to do that voice.
I get paid actually too well to imitate other races.
That's nice. That's really good.
Well, that's because I don't look like a white person.
Well, you're swarthy.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I deal with swarthy. I burn.
Yes, you're burn and peel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very Aryan, and it's frightening to me.
Wait, so I mean, as far as the Firesign Theater guys, what are their names? It's
here, grab the album.
Here, Philip Proctor,
John Gamble.
Stop, Dave Osman. Hold on, Philip Austin, Peter. Austin. Okay, there we go.
Peter Bergman.
Steve Austin.
You got them all. I was almost there. Peter Bergman, Philip Austin, Dave Osman, and Philip Proctor. And I mean, and they still perform. I saw them at the Barnsdall Theater up just off of Hollywood maybe a year ago, but I know they've done something more recently in other places.
Are they doing new stuff?
No, they do sort of a best of. They do That's their awesome. Older stuff, and they do some newer stuff. I mean, because they were writing, they still do as far as I know. Uh-huh. Like, they were writing through the 80s, because I have stuff about them bagging on the end of Reagan's...
really?
Yeah, presidency all over the place.
Wow.
And I mean, again, as good as they are, and, you know, like, some of their albums are kind of timeless, you know, How Can You Be in Two Places at Once if you're not when you're not anywhere at all, or Waiting for the Electrician or Somebody Like Him are two of the ones that I like a lot. Mm-hmm. They're not really that political, even though that they seem to be very
sure.
political. I mean,
sure.
then they're always making a comment about what's going on, but
right.
like when they get into the 80s, mm-hmm. that's when they really start bringing out the big guns, mm-hmm. and, you know, like taking direct shots
wow.
and things like that. And, you know, to mixed effect. I mean, again, I'm not a huge political satirist fan.
Right.
I mean, I like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, not that I'm an avid fan and watch all the time, but
right.
I do love the shows. But, you know, that's all based on content now. You
sure.
know? Like
you
literally, you can watch, you can read, you know, what is it, America the Book now, and be like, this is so quaint and
yeah.
outdated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I imagine.
It talks about a razor phone. What's that? Ridiculous. 2002. This one of the things I love about this particular album is that it seems to last forever, and even though it's about stuff that most kids today wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about,
right.
including the record that it's on.
Yeah, yeah.
You can hear them dialing a phone in
yeah.
it. And just, switching channels with a dial
mm-hmm.
and
That's
snow and static
Jesus,
and, you know, like how you used to be
work.
Watching a movie and, like, the sound would go out.
Yep.
And not like it is today when it could be the cable company or it could be the remote truck or it could be the, you know, the,
yeah.
you know, there's just, you know, the A's suck and there's an earthquake or whatever it is,
yep.
you know. So, yeah, it's, but it can be anything. But, yeah, this is a classic. I love to, like, drop horrible lines from it, but I'll be the only one who's having fun.
Oh.
And see how clever it even says right down there at the bottom. It's this side and the other side. They even name the sides.
That's good.
This side, the other side.
That's
Isn't
how
that
can...
nice?
No, this part.
Yeah.
You might not want to play
parts,
this record
these
because
parts are
of
great.
FCC.
Right, exactly.
You might not want to play this because of the FCC.
That's awesome.
You know,
because of that.
They got a lot of, you know, again.
On the radio, don't do it.
It's pretty genius. Like I said, I we were talking about earlier. I can tell where my friend Dan gets his sense of humor because he listened to this way more than I did. And there's so it's in me, but I didn't realize it.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
if you're a fan of modern comedy,
I
think you have to be. I like that. I think you have to be a Firesign Theater fan. I mean, again,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to be a drooling fanatic,
right.
but, you know, like
you
anybody who's a fan
it.
Of intelligent comedy, you have to like this.
Well, listening to this whole album was nice. Because,
it's a trip.
You know,
I mean, it
I
literally
it.
Is.
But like you said, I have to listen to it several more times to understand what the fuck I was just listening to.
Oh, yeah.
With maybe a few exceptions, but it's deep. Like you said, it's layered. But they did, it's clearly, I mean, they did get their start on radio, right? It's
oh, yeah.
The actual radio.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Just doing
it.
A lot of, like,
mm-hmm.
just all live effects and shit, which is just, oh, I love that. Because, like, the first, in 99, Dan and I did a really bad sketch comedy album, but the most fun part was making sound effects. None of them did we do live because we just couldn't do it, but that was my favorite part, is just trying to suck people in by, you know, just sound effects.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part of comedy. Well, audio comedy.
Well, I mean, no, any kind of comedy. It was just like waiting for that other shoe to drop. That's
mm-hmm.
comedy, isn't it?
Yeah,
know, it's just
it's
all
true.
The timing. Yeah, but I mean, and again, like these guys, I think this was their first album. Again, it's 1970, I think, so it's almost like pre-Python got to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Python was, what, 71 through 4, whatever it is, somewhere
in
there?
Yeah, and then it didn't get here until a little after,
right? Until after that. You know, I mean, we were pretty close, but...
This is the third
This is the third album? What was their first
Waiting for the Electrician.
Oh, so that was first.
And then How Can You Be in Two Places.
So those were the first two. Oh, wow, yeah, that's interesting. Awesome. Yeah, I love those two. They're just, they're incredibly well done. Again, I forget which one is which, but the one that's divided that has the four sections on one side and the second one is just all one loop. Mm-hmm. It's the second side, I think, is one of their best audio pictures. Like, this one's a total audio picture, but the one that's on the second side or the B-side of whatever album it is that I'm talking about, it's the one that has W.C. Fields Forever on it and Temporarily Humboldt County and all these other ones.
Can you get them all on CD or no?
I think you can. You can get them online. I think you can get them on iTunes.
Okay.
I think.
I'm trying to expose people to stuff you can't get, but it's best if you can. It's good that people appreciate them enough to put them.
But also, it's like, you can't, just because this is out doesn't mean anybody's listening
sure,
to it. You know,
sure.
Like, nobody knows this
cost
stuff.
Me a dollar. And that's, three copies of this.
Holy, you played a dollar for this?
Yeah. Totally worth it for a dollar, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
On vinyl, a dollar, worth it. Worth it just for the art alone.
But then they have to leave the house.
Well, yeah.
For the record, Jeremy did just show the cover of the album to the microphone.
No, I was holding it up for myself because I was actually fanning myself.
I'm pretty sure he was showing it to the microphone.
It's nice. Also, it's got them as zodiac signs.
Oh, is that what's going on?
That's the whole, I believe that's the joke.
That's good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't really get it.
Yeah, I'm still confused. But
this is a confusing album.
That is the intent.
I still don't get it. I've listened to it a lot, and there's still things that I still think are hysterically funny.
They said that their name was derived from all of their signs, astrological signs or fire signs. So that's why.
Along with
being a play on the Fireside Theater, it's a play on that all of their signs are
fire signs.
Fire signs.
How New World and nerdy and hippie-ish.
I hesitate to even call this sketch because it is, you know, it just flows in and there's no beginning, middle, end. It's not punchline based.
Again,
none of that.
The same kind of thing with the Python stuff, but this is even almost more so in the sense like it's almost more like Mr. Show where whatever you're watching has become now background.
Right.
The thing that you're currently watching becomes a minor part of the next thing.
But
at least
Python had dialogue. There's barely dialogue in this. It's all monologue.
Well,
not all of it.
You know, it's just, you know, like when Porgy and Mudhead are in the car, it's like, you know, I got that meeting of the full analyst club. I didn't know you masturbated. Come on. You know, it's got some great back and forth. Doesn't Louise count? Only to 10, Mudhead. You know, like
it's brilliant.
It's got some good ones in there.
But it just doesn't feel like a sketch album.
It's not. I don't, again, like when I saw them do this live, it was really about me just kind of like sitting back and almost like looking up into the lights and just listening to them do
again.
It. And just enjoying everybody else, enjoying it around me.
Yeah.
So they did this, they performed these live.
Well, like, bits and pieces, and not necessarily from this. I mean, they'll do, again, they've got 100 pieces of material, you know, because again, you said they have like 22 albums that they've released, you know, and like, and again, some of them are just compilations of stuff they did on the radio. Some of them are full albums, like Eat or Be Eaten or This or Waiting for the Electrician but Dear Friends is like a collection of their radio stuff. So, I mean, again, it goes back and forth. But it's...
Do you know their backgrounds much? Like, do you know...
They're all California hippies, aren't they? They're all... Yeah. All
they look like it.
Yeah, they're all, you know, weirdo beardos from the 70s who are all smart, and I think they meet at school or something like that. I used to know this
thing. It is interesting to hear something from that period that doesn't have a slant. It's just intended strictly to be funny. You know what I mean? There's no... Even Cheech and Chong had a slant. That slant was, you know, liberal potheads.
And to be honest with you, I much prefer... I mean, like, I like Cheech and Chong. Sure. Don't get me wrong. I like a lot of their stuff. But I'm not a big fan of drug humor.
No, me neither.
I find it panders for the most part.
Sure.
And it's obvious and not really funny. But I do love the Fireside Theater's drug humor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when they get to the... I think is it in this album when it switches over from the Porgy and Mudhead a High School Madness to the Lieutenant Porgy in the war scene.
Oh yeah.
When the two guys run into the trench, it's like, don't run into trenches. Look out for that entrenching tool, right? You know, the sergeant's there. And then they go, hey, it's Pico and Alvarado. So you can tell that they're from, you know, Southern California, because, you know, Pico and Alvarado run in. And they're like, you know, Alvarado, what's it like out there? Weird. We've been shooting the reds and yellows all day. Man, am I sleepy. You know, I mean, like, it's a great pill reference.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, they're able to do drug references. You know, like, they don't do a lot of pot references, even though they, in this one, they have a great drug one in one of the other albums. Again, one of my favorite ones, which I cannot remember which one it is. It's like making all the good jokes, but not calling attention to the culture behind it.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, like Mr. Show's Altered States of Drugachusetts, as opposed to most of... No, I like Nice Dreams. I even like Half Baked for the most part.
Right.
And like, I mean, it does have the fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, which I think is one of the greatest lines ever written in a movie. Elegant, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Efficiency of words. I love it. I have no idea. But
did this inspire you specifically to do anything, or was it just simply teaching you about comedy?
I mean, I think anybody who wants to create comedy, even if you're not necessarily writing it, even if it's just a matter of, you know, like, I'm performing or whatever, I want to use this take, I want to use this voice, I want to use this, you know. There's a million things I steal from this.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, to use it directly, I wrote a really terrible radio serial in college called Grand Failure with two friends of mine. Actually, three, but two of us, the three of us did most of the writing. Eric Adler and Greg Keller. And we wrote a radio serial called Grand Failure based on a radio serial that Eric and two other friends of mine, Rob Marbury and Andre Lee, wrote when I was in college, and it was just about, you know, people, and it was really funny. It was terrible, but it was really funny. It was literally like a 3-minute serial, and it would go on and had like the aging, you know, the diva who had the daughter with her, and anytime she called her mom, she got slapped. You know, it's like,
that's awesome.
Monk. I mean, Winona. You know, like,
awesome.
It's just like, it's a great bit.
That's good.
So we decided to emulate Fireside Theater and that and everything else. So we stole from everywhere, and we came up with this serial called Grand Failure, and it was a really flimsy premise. It was a bunch of racial stereotypes, because those were the voices we did. I mean, like, one of the characters was called Patio Furniture. I'm not kidding, okay? So Patio Furniture came in there. And it was about a group of these guys getting together to fill the Grand Canyon with beer to freeze it to play a hockey game. Again, this is not brilliant by any stretch of the imagination.
But
we thought it was a decent comedic premise, which goes to show you we didn't know much. And marijuana was very easy to come by.
Sure.
As it is. As it is out here still, which is why everyone lives in Southern California. Anybody who lives out here, don't lie.
I'm the only person out here who's ever smoked.
No, but everybody comes out. There's no one I know out here who isn't out here because of marijuana besides me.
I've never smoked.
See, but that's a lie because...
No, I've never smoked.
I'll describe what I see around me, ladies and gentlemen. There is literally a chair made out of glass pipes.
All right, well,
and every one of them has a bowl on it.
That is art.
He's been sitting on it like he's been sitting in it for about 14 hours.
This is art.
That's not art.
It is art.
I know what art
it's
looks
comfortable.
Like. Art is on the wall.
It's comfortable art.
All right.
Well, what do you call that?
Well, that's,
I think it's on the wall.
That's a tribal mask.
Yeah. Filled with marijuana.
Okay, see, you gave it away.
I'm sorry. I wanted you to discover me, and I was wanting an intervention.
I knew you could put weed in its mouth.
Yeah, I was asking for help.
No,
and it was a cry for help.
Well.
Where were we?
Here's a tissue.
No, thank
Dab
you.
Dab those tears.
Thank you.
Stop your crying. I don't know. Where were
sketch?
We?
You were doing a sketch comedy in college.
So, yeah, we did our horrible sketch thing, and it was largely derived from this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean... We found Firesign scripts to literally break them down and be like, they couldn't have actually written all of this.
Right.
And we're like, they did. They wrote all of this.
Awesome.
Oh, my God.
Did this get you to listen to anything else specifically? Did it make you want...
It got me to get so frustrated working at the computer trying to write a script that I broke down with a couple of friends of mine. They had a small startup company, and we... developed final draft. And if nothing else, you know, you can thank me if you want, but I think that was the best thing that came out of that.
That's very good. Yeah. That's amazing.
That and me losing my hands.
Oh.
But that was for a different software.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a porn thing.
Have they been replaced?
The porn software? No, yeah, I mean, it gets faster and faster.
That is true.
It's amazing. I don't even have to type anymore. Not that I could with these
stuff. It's okay that I pirate Final Draft, right?
I love pirate porn. Wait, what are we talking about?
Final Draft.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Anything that you can take from the computer for free is totally legal, no matter what Metallica says.
I don't want to endorse or enforce piracy. I don't know how I would enforce piracy.
I'll join you and not endorse piracy unless you're from Somalia.
Okay.
Because they do it right.
They do it right, and they've got, you know, they've got a reason to do it. They're poor.
They don't fuck around.
They're poor. Do we steal music because we're poor? Not that we steal music. We don't. We're entitled.
No, I steal music because it's easier than buying it most of the time.
Well, that is
but
true.
But I'm also one of those saps that if I do happen to find or get myself a burned copy of something, like when the next time I go to the show, like I'll be the dope who buys like 3 t-shirts and like 2 of the live albums, even though I hate them.
Sure.
So I always make sure I try to get that.
Why
money
are you burning
back
a copy of something anyway that you hate? Is the question.
Well, no, I didn't burn that. Buying.
You hate the shirt?
Buying.
Wait, you hate the shirt?
No, I hate the live album.
You hate the live album.
But I'll buy 2 of it to pay for the good recording studio one I stole earlier.
Well, that's reasonable.
And not always. That's and by reasonable. Not always, I mean almost never.
Almost never. Yeah. Right. That's have you do you
I always feel so guilty when I download stuff that I go and I buy bootlegs on the streams. I gotta give someone the money. So right. There you go.
I need a copy of Thor with a dude's feet on the seat in front of it.
Damn.
I do need to see Thor, by the way. I wasn't kidding.
Do you?
That part.
You gonna see it?
No, I just saw Captain America.
I saw Captain America.
Not as funny as what as this.
No. Definitely not.
No.
But the parts that I really liked about Captain America were the humorous bits.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Sure.
It
was a good movie.
Final fight scene I didn't care for. Same with Iron Man 2.
It's all right. I liked that. I mean, it's all right. If you like the Avengers, you know, what do you expect?
Right. Well, I'm not a comic book person, so I'm strictly coming at it from I'm watching a movie.
That's where the girlfriend comes from.
That is true. She loves comic books.
Nicely done. She I don't know. It's the lack of liking.
The lack of, that's what right.
I
mean.
Like, I don't like comic books, i.e. therefore, I have a girlfriend.
I have a girlfriend.
See how it all fits together?
No, but she likes them, though. She loves them. Oh. But I guess that's okay if she does.
Yeah, that's all right.
It doesn't really matter.
Let the girl like whatever she likes.
Okay. I love you, honey.
See, there it is. She could be into, like, mink stoles and precious gems. You know, it's like, you know. Comic books are still relatively cheap, man.
It is true.
You know. I know that they cost more than a nickel. You know, they used to. But
DC's revamping their entire line.
And charging a nickel?
They're not charging a nickel. They're starting over from issue 1 with everything.
What do you mean they're starting over?
They're starting the entire line. They're rebooting
everything. I mean, like, you can't do that.
Everything is going to start at 1 again because Flash ran too fast and he ruined the space-time.
He ruined everything.
That's how they started it. They
awesome.
Start
wow. How wow. nice.
Wow.
And so we can redraw the same crap.
Yeah. See, but I'm wondering if they...
It's like revamping the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's been done.
You know what? God can get that shit done in 4.5 days. Come on.
Well, how many times has it been done? They added Jesus, then...
And the Apocrypha is awesome, because it's like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. You know? It's like the Bible from a different point of view. Imagine if Jesus showed up when the conquistadors were around. Look at the wacky... It's like a comic book. It's like a what if.
Why hasn't that been done as a comic book?
That would be great. An awesome Jesus and Spidey team up.
Oh, that'd be so amazing.
Oh. See, like, you know, because you'd see Jesus fighting Namor, because he'd be standing on the water, and Namor would jump out, and then, back, hit him in the face, knock him back under. Boom! See, I came up with the Marvel version of Aquaman.
This is happening.
See, that's nerdy. And we got away from First Sun Theater.
I know we did, but that's, you know... That's the way this thing kind of goes. Sometimes
it devolves. You should drink more, then it would devolve faster.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that. Maybe we might do a little drinky one time. Speaking of which, you know, let me just bring it very quickly. I met Jeremy through a thing called a drinking game.
Oh yes, the drinking game.
And we perform monthly a movie generally from the 80s.
Yep.
And he has played Bill Murray's part in Ghostbusters,
yes,
Peter
Venkman.
You played What's-His-Name's part in The Three Amigos.
I did play What's-His-Name's part.
Yep.
It was
Hefe. And he most recently was an Inigo Montoya
and
a Princess Bride.
Yeah.
But yeah, they
did. Did you like my picture on Facebook? Because I noticed that all of the people in this on Facebook, they changed their profile picture
to their character.
A still from the movie of the movie that we're reading. And did anybody notice my Mandy Patinkin picture?
I saw it. I know it was not Inigo Montoya. But
no, it was him. It was him doing an ad for Crestor.
Yes, remember when he was doing that? That's right.
I thought that was a good picture. I tried getting one of him from Yentl.
Oh, that would be nice.
And I could, but they were all thumbnails. And,
oh, that doesn't.
And
help.
Facebook wouldn't put them out. And like the one I really wanted was him just looking right at the camera. And he's so young. He's got all this curly hair. And I'm like, oh, he looks like me.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, a better looking.
So these meetings that you do once a month, that's different than the weekly ones you do in the basement.
Yeah, that's different. That's very different. These meetings are. There's a lot of people around. Nobody's admitted anything.
Okay.
Yeah. No. And
you can tell who you are. You're allowed to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to say Jeremy G or whatever.
Right.
It is,
if I didn't, I wouldn't be getting all these acting gigs.
Then I think I will come.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. I got to play Mr. Miyagi the one before.
Oh,
that's
so good.
That was.
I didn't get to do shit. I got to watch a lot. Is that a Cobra Kai
this
shirt?
Is a Cobra
yes, it
Kai
is.
Shirt.
He is wearing a Cobra
Holy
Kai shirt.
Shit.
I noticed that when you came in.
That's amazing.
Sweep
Fear
the leg.
Does not exist
Fear
in this
in
dojo.
Dojo, does it?
Nope.
I will give Alan credit. That was good. Alan's got a good booming voice when he
I like Alan because he can make any character adapt to Alan Rickert.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't need to do it the other way. He'll take the character and be like, you know what? I'm going to bring out the Alan in you.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved his walking through the crowd. That was pretty great.
Yeah.
Spurring everyone on.
We're all talking about somebody that nobody at home knows.
It doesn't matter.
Alan. But Alan is awesome.
You'll get to know him
soon.
He's
going to be on. He's going to be on an episode.
Oh, he's going to be big. Big, big, big.
Yes.
Yeah. After he kills a whole bunch of people, he's going to be... You're going to hear about him. He's going to leave his car on the train tracks. You're going to be hearing about Alan Rugger. Word up. I got a little off point.
Yep.
What's the next one we're doing? We're doing Better Off Dead? Is that it?
That is Better Off Dead is what we're going
to
be doing.
I bet you I know who I'll be playing.
Yeah.
Booger.
I don't know that movie that well,
That's another one I know fairly decently.
So, Fire Sign Theater.
Yes, back to the Fire Sign Theater.
Mm-hmm. Tell us something else about the Fire Sign Theater, Jeremy.
To be honest with you, it's one of the few groups or comedy, you know, groups or, you know, duos or whatever you can even say that I actually still enjoy hunting down stuff.
Yeah.
Because with everybody else, you know, like if you're a Woody Allen, you know, fan, if you like his stand up, there are two albums. That's it.
Yeah. Right.
You're not getting anything else. If you're a Steve Martin fan, there's a couple things you can get. Nothing else. And most of those albums, half of them are visual anyway.
Yeah.
So you're kind of losing out. You know, most of these people have stopped making stuff. And even, you know, like people today where you can find little bootlegs here and there with, you know, the advent of cell phones and everything, you know, everybody's stuff gets recorded instantly. So you can't find, like, new Mitch Hedberg stuff.
Sure.
You know, like 2 years after his death, I had it all.
Yeah.
You know, and not to say that, you know, like, and he was amazing and, again, went way too soon, like we were talking before, you know, Phil Hartman. And, like, you can still find that great stuff. But Firesign Theater, I mean, there are still albums. There's an album that I had on tape that ate itself in my car when I first moved out here because I didn't realize that the sun is hot.
Oh, yeah, it gets warm.
Again, from New York, didn't own a car, moved out here, treated a car more like my locker in high school, and it therefore turned into my locker at high school. It smelled, it had food in it, and it destroyed most of the things that were important to me, including my Eat or Be Eaten tape. Which is a really, again, interesting idea. It's, again, a conceptual album that Firesign Theater did about getting sucked into a computer.
Awesome.
And so not Tron at all. I think it's like 1980.
That's awesome.
You know, and it's its own thing. It's got this great picture of a jeweled snake eating itself on the cover. And it's called Eat or Be Eaten. And it's, again, one of the later ones. Not as good as I think the early ones, but I think a great album.
Right. Just from that, no, and there are no. Here's the thing,
and I can't find it. I cannot find
what?
It. I can't find it. No.
Did you possibly imagine it? Is the question?
No,
that's question number
because
one.
When I met them, I said, you know, like, can you help me out here, guys? I'm trying to find Eat or Be Eaten, and they went, "Oh my God, well, I don't think we have any copies of that." Dick Sherrill, do you know anybody else? I can't remember the last time I even saw
they
them.
Themselves
so it's not
have,
like they
Jesus
were like,
Christ.
"Well, what are you talking about?" No, you know, or like, or suddenly it's like, you know, like Twilight Zone episode where all the words mean different things.
Yeah.
Apple, carp, you know, like, oh, you know, no, all the words, zebra is
finish.
There's nobody that seems to do anything like this. Not that they should be stealing this style, but...
It's because nobody... And to be completely honest with you, it's the main reason is because nobody wants to see this.
Right.
There's nothing in this right now that will equal success in show business.
Sure, it just equals art at this point.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, even these guys still audition and go out. You know, like, I see... I don't know what I think I saw Phil Proctor auditioning for some... You know, Disney show along with me. We're sitting in the same room together. You know, and I'm like...
That blows my mind.
It's damn Phil Proctor. You know, I can literally go up and do every character that he does to him.
Sure.
And he'll punch me in the mouth, but, you know, it'll be worth it.
Yeah. God.
And that's what it is. And, you know, and that's a lot of these guys. You know, it's like the time I bumped into Tom Kenny.
Uh-huh.
You know, auditioning. He was auditioning for the animated Penguins after Madagascar. They were doing that on Nickelodeon. And I was going in to do some live action thing. And he asked me where the sign-in sheet was. And, of course, I know it's Tom Kenny right away because I was a Mr. Show fan and I'm a SpongeBob fan.
Right.
I know who he is. And he walked in and was like, is this a sign-in sheet? And I said, yeah, but I don't think we're signing in for the same thing. He said, look, man, there's really very little difference from where you are. You know, and he's like, don't say that. And then I was like, well, I'm a big fan. He kind of turned his back and, you know, he's like, thanks. And then I said, yeah, I love Mr. Show. And they kind of stopped and turned around because I'm in Nickelodeon Studios. Sure. So I'm sure he was like, oh, SpongeBob. But I said Mr. Show. And he turned around, he walked right up and he goes, I don't think you want to be mentioning that in this building. I was like, ooh, is that too taboo? The fact that you said, you know, off-color words and a different job. And so, like, he comes back and we sat and we talked really briefly. And he said, you know, man, there's very little difference from where you're sitting and where I'm sitting. I still have to come in and audition like a schmuck like everybody else. And
is there a venue? I mean, other than, I guess the internet is the first thought I have. I don't know if anybody's doing this on the internet, though, anyway.
No, I mean, like, you know. Yeah, but again, you know, like, the closest thing I can come to any of this stuff, you know, is Flying Circus, is Mr. Show. It's comedy writing that's not just concerned with writing a... Here's the premise, setup, punchline. You know, like, it's not that. They're looking for all of their ideas to seamlessly fit together.
Yeah.
In this amazing amalgam. And to be honest with you, I often wonder how comedy writers can write typical bullshit setup punchline comedy after listening to this stuff.
Sure.
You know, and seeing what people are able to do.
Well, I question my own comedy writing when I hear something this conceptual anyway. Sure. That is succeeding through the whole thing. Because, I mean, I've been trying.
I mean, it's impossible to aspire to a Don't Crush That Door, Family of the Pliers. They couldn't write this all the time. Sure. This is a one-shot deal.
Sure.
And, like, even though Rolling Stone said this is probably the best comedy album ever made, don't mean anybody ever knows what the hell it is.
Right.
And I can mention this to 1,000 people, and maybe 3 of them will know what the hell I'm talking about, let alone the one that has an appreciation for it.
Right.
So, you know, again, it's like, why aren't people running out to make this type of thing? Because it will kill you to try and create something like this, and there will be little to no any sort of recompense or, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
I can't think.
You're not going to get anything in return that you really want.
Sure.
You know, like, the best thing I could ever hope for in creating an album that was like this is to have the 4 guys in Firesign Theater go, you know that album you made?
Yeah.
You know, the one, the Potholders on Mount Baldy? That is the best album I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. That title sucks, but it's awesome. You know, like, that would be the best I could hope to get.
Right.
Because, you know, NBC isn't going to come knocking going, you know that difficult thing that everyone hates? Let me buy it!
Right.
I can't wait to turn this into a difficult program that no one will watch. This will be a conceptual nightmare.
Yeah.
Sign me up. You know, like, no one's going to do that.
It would just be good to see somebody else try. Not for the sake of money, even. Fuck it. You know, just for the sake of experimenting and trying to learn how to be a better comedian.
But who would it be?
I don't know.
You know, like, it can't be somebody on their own.
Dane Cook?
I'm leaving the room now.
He could do it.
He can do anything. He's amazing. Anybody who can be that successful in comedy without actually having material.
Hey, there's a sound effect.
You ruined it by talking again.
Shit!
Oh, wait, he's leaving again. Door opens.
I'll be quiet this time.
Door closed.
Oh, he left. What are we going to do?
Footsteps. 2 shots.
Let's see what I did.
Oh, wait, he's
there. Fuck!
I tried doing a Firesign Theater bit there at the end.
I'm sorry, and I interrupted you.
It's The Further Adventures of Nick Danger. Again, I was watching an episode of... Whose Line Is It Anyway? And I saw a British comedian literally steal 2 Firesign Theater jokes verbatim.
Really?
On the show.
And make them on the BBC sound as though it's her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was doing this. She was trying to do a mock-up of a film noir thing, was the setup. And she goes, what was it? At Drucker and 4th, I turned right. At 4th and Drucker, I turned left. I turned across the street and walked into a big sandstone building. Ow, my nose. You know, like, literally. Wow. I mean, like, and that's Fireside Theater verbatim.
That Kate Blanchett's a bitch. She's not even English. What am I doing?
She's not. She's Ukrainian.
She's Ukrainian?
Well, what? I don't know.
Isn't she Aussie?
Is she?
I believe so. Mike, you've got the internet.
They're
ask,
all prisoners.
Ask Mr. Internet, please.
They're prisoners from there.
That's Filipino. Really
She's Filipino. Good to know. I had no idea. That's she just, that not. Blows me away. A lot of makeup.
I'm trying to think if there's any other Fireside Theater stuff that I've heard been stolen from lately. I don't think so. It's usually just me.
Right. Well, that's fine.
It's hard to believe that it's not improv. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and
because
it's incredible to think it's not improv.
Because of how fucking stream of consciousness seems to be.
Oh, sure.
But it's only there to stimulate your own
and
stream
of consciousness.
And it
says that all three of the four members had to agree for any writing for it to go forward.
Right.
If it was two and two, then
they
it
mixed
wouldn't,
it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was one of the great things about them is that as a group, they were, again, as an ensemble, we were talking about the ensemble of
News Radio.
Right. And just how, like, how can you not recognize that? Because that's really what an ensemble is. When you see people literally look like they're having a good time acting with one another, that's it.
Yep. Where they don't
seem to
be trying.
Right. You
want
to be part of that world just because it looks like it's fun.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with these guys. When you listen to their stuff in the studio, when they were literally just ad-libbing, and you know they're improvising in the radio studio, it's their give and take is incredible. Every once in a while, they'll step on one another's feet or whatever, but even the mistakes are acknowledged and used because they understand the other's timing, their senses of humor. They also understand, you know, how to layer the voices that you can say something, you know, as a background thing. If you move away a little bit, you're not going to get in the way of what somebody else is doing.
Right.
Again, they were figuring it out as they did it, but they were incredibly adept. You know, like they got very comfortable and found something that worked really quickly, and I think they were able to capitalize on it.
What kind of bothers me is that I don't often enough, you know, when people are giving way too much lip service to their favorite comedians, like if they interview any famous actor who should even be asked about comedy.
Like Dane Cook?
Right.
This was great. You guys watch Turner Classic Movies?
Yeah.
The Essentials in Turner Classic Movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Alec Baldwin is the guest host. And he was doing, I think it was City Lights with Robert Osborne, right? So it's Robert Osborne and Alec Baldwin, and they're doing, and the movie that they're doing is City Lights, so it's Chaplin, and it's probably one of my favorites. It's absolutely gorgeous. It comes to the end, and it's got those last two lines where he goes, "So you can see now." And she turns to him and goes, "Yes, I can see now." And it's absolutely beautiful.
Kills me.
Oh,
it kills
God,
me.
Every time. It's like, you know, like when they take the kid away and the kid. It's like, how does he do it? How does he do it? Yeah. Oh, my God. You want gags? Keaton. You want comedy that's close to religion?
Mm-hmm.
Chaplin.
Yeah.
Want guy to blow off three of his fingers? Lloyd. So they come to the end of the movie, and it's it's Alec Baldwin and Robert Osborne. They're sitting there, and Robert Osborne's talking about, you know, just the amazing layered comedy that Chaplin does and how adept he was, and just he was an artist.
Sure.
And then Alec Baldwin opens his mouth and says, "Well, it's actually kind of like two people that I've been fortunate enough to work with, Jim Carrey and Ben Stiller." And then there's this brief pause, and Robert Osborne goes, "I completely disagree with you." And then proceeds to totally knock down. Because you can tell Alec Baldwin was saying that to, like, you know, kiss a little, you know, contemporary, you know, ass. And he was like, "Oh, these people have been in things." And, "Oh, they're great. They're great." And Robert Osborne was like, "No, you know, Jim Carrey does goofy stuff. And Ben Stiller stuff is mostly mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's actually mean. And you feel bad, or you want the person, you know, you're not really rooting.
Right.
You know, it's really just have something bad happening to the person instead of just circumstances. So I completely disagree with you." And then there's this other lull. And Alec Baldwin goes, "Can't argue with that." And it's like, no, you can't. You can't argue with that, can you? When you try to compare somebody to Charlie Chaplin, who's making comedies today, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot.
Yep.
The only person I think you can compare to somebody who's in movies and TV to Charlie Chaplin is Bill Irwin. That's it. He is the only person. Maybe Rowan Atkinson.
Right.
Maybe Rowan Atkinson, maybe Bill Irwin, but that's it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put Johnny Depp on that list, even though I think he does great physical comedy.
Sure.
I'm not going to put most people who write or do any kind of comedy. Even Zach Galifianakis, who I think is absolutely one of the best people out there right now.
Yep.
But, you know, but it was so great seeing Robert Osborne go, like, you know what, don't compare anybody to Chaplin. Please, so you're going to make everybody sad.
It's amazing.
It was great.
Why, my thing is that, like, again, you ask somebody like an Alec Baldwin, you know, who are your big influences, he's going to be one of those people who does pull out the stereotypical, oh, Python, and they call them Python. I know people do, but I hate listening to actors call them Python because you can tell they're just trying to relate and be tools. You don't hear Fire Sign Theater. Nobody mentions them.
No.
And they should be.
They should be. If anybody is mentioning Python, you know, I mean, anybody who, you know, like, really understand, or I mean, that understands, who really, I mean, enjoys it, watches, sure, you know, watches it and enjoys it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the same thing with, you know, Blackadder, or, you know, Mr. Bean, or Fawlty Towers. I mean, even Are You Being Served, or, you know, like, any of the great BBC comedies, even the great American comedies.
Yeah.
If you're talking about great comedic writing, and you don't mention the Fire Sign Theater, I think you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
It's really easy to forget about them, which is one reason I think most people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing is, like I said, I'd heard one album, remembered liking it, but then after that, remember nothing about it. My friend Dan, we'll talk about them all the time. I love them. I feel really bad for just kind of ignoring him when he does that. I won't do it. Dan, I love you. I won't do that anymore. You can thank Jeremy.
It's all right. I'm here to defend the Fireside name.
It's good. I mean, I do.
And they are. They're great.
By listening to it, I just, and now knowing that they're in LA, we should just hunt them all down and get them on the podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, I bet you could get at least one of them. I mean, Philip Proctor is with the Antaeus Theater Company, which is in town.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I mean, I know most of these guys are at least around, because they get together every now and again. So, I mean,
that's awesome.
You know, it would be worth it, because, again, you know, just to hear one of them talk about what it was like to actually do this.
Sure.
And be kind of on the cutting edge of comedy. You know, it's like, you couldn't do this now and not get famous.
Sure, right.
You know what I mean? Every single one of these guys. You know, I think the closest thing you can get to this is The Onion.
Sure. Yeah.
Right now.
You know, about to go on strike.
Well, why? Because they didn't win a Pulitzer?
Their writers are about to go on strike.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because
they're not getting paid enough.
Yeah, it's a big deal because they're not a member of the Writers Guild right now. So
they're not. Issues. Oh, no. And they are releasing a lot of
videos and shit. Yeah. But wait a minute. But what about the show that's on IFC?
That's the crux of the issue.
Oh, really? Because they have that one in Sports Dome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They have a Sports one.
Yeah. That's on Comedy Central.
That's a
network people actually watch, as opposed to IFC.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I mean, because if they couldn't put it on, they couldn't put the news one on Comedy Central.
They could.
It would step on some toes.
Well, I mean, there's no point in having it if you've got the Daily Show. Yeah. You know, it's like, you want to come up with a fake ESPN? Yes, I'm into it.
Their actors are really good because they're complete unknowns, and they kill me every time.
I think Sports Dome is pretty good. The first one I saw was the best. I have to tell you, the regular news show on IFC, I think, is better. It's easier to watch on a consistent basis. But I think the look of Sports Dome, I mean, God damn it. If you didn't know it wasn't ESPN, you'd be watching it for 10 awesome. Minutes going ten like, minutes. Why is Randy Moss on ice skates? You know, and you're like, oh, it's fake.
Right. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But that's what I got when I was little with not necessarily the news.
Oh, HBO, not necessarily the news.
I was like watching loved it for the first time when I'm like 10 years old going,
Stuart Pankin.
This doesn't seem like it's real news.
Yeah, right. Sniglets and all that other stuff. Awesome. I remember that one. Rich Hall was on
that.
Wait,
who came up? Conan worked on that show, did he not?
He worked...
Am I thinking of the wrong show?
I have no idea.
Fuck, what show is it?
He was on The Simpsons for...
Well, yeah, but he worked for a show similar...
We're talking about The Barbarian?
Yes. Yeah, he was a big comedy writer before he ever started a movie.
Good. I don't. Has anybody even made a Conan the Barbarian joke to Conan since like the third or second season he was on TV?
I remember he dealt with
that so well those first couple of years.
Yep.
He was awesome.
Well, he'd always bring up how kids used to pick on him about it in school and just make the other person feel kind of stupid for bringing it up.
I loved it. Those uncomfortable years, the first two, they're just so awesome to watch.
I will admit fully, because I'm such a huge fan of Conan now.
I'm glad he shaved the beard, by the way. Good job, Conan. I hated that damn thing.
Did you?
I hate it.
It was a depression beard, and it was depressing to look at.
But see, that's just it. You're allowed to be... The only certain times rich people can grow beards, it's if you're an athlete and it's a rally,
sure,
you can do that, right? Or it's like you've been lost in the wilderness for like 8 days, you know? It's like, I had to kill that bear, which is why I grew this beard. You know, it's like, well, God damn it, man. It's like, you earned it.
I hate to admit that...
Also, that was one of the Olsen twins I was doing.
Was it?
She'd gruffed up.
Oh, okay, that was good.
It was. I had to kill and eat Mary Kate, turned the flesh into a canoe, so I got downstream.
Not necessarily news was Conan and Greg Daniels' first writing gig.
There you go.
That's why they're best buddies, and that's Conan's on an episode of The Office briefly.
Yes, he is.
But yeah, I didn't like Conan at first because I think I was a little too young and ignorant to get it.
And also,
I turned 16, and all of a sudden, it's just like.
And if you were a Letterman fan, it was very hard.
I was, and that's the thing. And I was like, no, I can't do this. And then the first thing I watched, which I found out later was a Dino Stamatopoulos bit, is the ostrich or turkey pooping presents onto the audience. And I was like, I don't get this off. And then I'm like, I'm gonna give this a shot. I'm 16, great. And then I was like, my mind was blown.
So
my
many great little blown. Things. I mean, anything that can come up with triumph.
Oh yeah,
is worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah,
just brilliant.
And a robot that pooped.
Oh yeah. And Pimpot.
Oh, yeah, God, Pimpot was amazing.
And Abe Vigoda, releasing him into Central Park at the end of the New York run, I thought was so cute. Masturbating Bear, the vomiting Kermit, so many classic characters.
And just...
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. No, but I have to say, like, if you wanted... You know, I would love to actually hear what Conan O'Brien would have to say about Fireside Theater.
Yeah.
Because you know he knows his shit, and you know he's listened to it and knows his stuff.
Sure.
You know, like, there's some people I would... You know, Zach Galifianakis would probably be somebody else you could ask about it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, unfortunately, you don't hear a lot about. And every time I bring it up, there's always maybe one person who will go, oh, yeah, I kind of know that.
Right, that would have been me, yeah.
And everybody else doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about.
And it is sad, and I don't know what the hell you
And they have
do
some
it.
Great little bits, you know, from Dear Friends, which is one of their collection albums. They have some good 3 to 5 minute bits that completely stand on their own and are hysterically funny.
And I would imagine that would be the best way to pull somebody in unless I mean, the problem, again, obviously, is attention span. I mean, have you tried with your students?
What, to listen to this stuff?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't have the time where I can actually sit down and do nothing with them for half an hour.
45 minutes, yeah.
You know, it's like, I got so much to do on a regular basis. But, I mean, but it's the same thing, you know, with any, like, long extended bit, you know, it's just, nobody cares.
Right.
You know, it's like, why should I care about this when I get this, you know, 8 different things in a row, yeah.
I sound like an old person when I say that. I've got the YouTube.
No, but it's all really good, don't get me wrong, but I like an extended narrative every once in a while too. I like, you know, just a stupid bit.
Yeah.
I like little things.
Sure.
But I can pay attention too.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of the, you know, and this is one of those ones that you get to the end of the first side and you're just going, all right, I need 2 seconds. My head hurts. That part where the principal's talking at the high school and there's that one guy cursing at him. It's just too damn funny. You know? Thank you, kids. Fuck you.
Yeah, so good.
Thank you.
And then at the end, doesn't he say, fuck you, too?
As he's walking off. All right, thanks. It's like, what is reality? You know, just like just screaming things. Yeah. We're not afraid of it, are we? Eat it. You bet. Eat it raw. Raw, raw, raw. That's the spirit we have here. Okay. And then the drum goes, all right, Dave, all right, hold it down. You know, I mean, like all those little things as he's going off, boo, fuck you too. You know what I mean? It's like you have to listen to it over and over and over again because you'll actually start laughing at something and stop and go, oh shit, I missed this.
Right.
Part. God damn it.
It's impossible to put these guys into a category. I'm just realizing that the more we talk about it, it's absolutely impossible and it deserves to have a cover this confusing.
And
there's no point in trying to figure it out.
And to be honest with you, I'll make you listen, and I'll figure out which album. It's either How Can You Be in Two Places at Once or Waiting for the Electrician.
Yeah.
The B-side of that, it's got some of the funniest crap I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's one of the ones where, again, it switches like this, but it goes even faster.
Yeah.
Because it's only about a 20-minute loop to get from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they have the, it's the... one of the things that I think that I could probably even make into a sketch, a game show called Beat the Reaper, which is actually one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And they just got a contestant and they take him out of the isolation ward and they shoot him up with something in a syringe and they have 10 seconds to describe their symptoms and tell him what they have. And then if they do, they get the antidote. If not, you just have to keep whatever it is. You know, I was like, oh my God, I got jaundice. Jaundice it is! Give it our topless nurse, Nancy, will now give him the antidote. You know what I mean? Like, it's
amazing.
And it sounds like a game show. You can hear the audience. You can hear the lights and, you know, the shitty theme and everything else.
It sucks you in.
You know, the
so
ticking clock. It's, you know, like, they get it. They really build a complete auditory picture.
I'm regretting I didn't buy more $1 albums today. You know, because they had two more Firesign.
Do you remember what they had?
There.
What they were?
No.
Do you remember what they had?
I could see them online.
Did they have?
If
one
I saw
them
online, I would know.
Did it have one? It's my favorite album cover. It's a group of them. It's actually all of them, but they actually look like Russian soldiers or peasants or whatever it is, and they're lined up at the bottom, and it has two pictures: one big one of Groucho Marx, one big one of John Lennon. It says under it, Marx and Lennon.
Yes, I have seen that one.
That's my favorite album.
I think they might have that there.
They might have
that one there for $1.
I don't know if that's the album that I keep talking about, but I have no idea. It's not the one with Ralph Spoilsport Motors on it, which is again hysterically funny.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bit that they do with, and again, very California, about a guy trying to buy a car at a dealership, and it is hysterical.
It's awesome
because it's a mess. It's just a giant mess.
Yeah,
you know? And they get into this car that's a Winnebago. You know, it's like, and you don't realize is that it's the Firesign Theater. So of course the thing has everything in it.
Yeah.
It's got a TV and a thing, but like more stuff than anything had at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And of course, they've already been driving in it as they're negotiating, which you don't realize either. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, they're amazing. They just, again, it's like you said, nobody does this.
Right.
That's it.
What do you want to say to the Firesign Theater as we wrap up?
I am, and always will be a huge fan. I just, nobody else does this stuff. And for me, if you want to talk about like the great pantheon of silent film stars, you've got, you know, Chaplin, Keaton, Lloyd, maybe if you want to throw in,
Fatty Arbuckle.
Laurel and Hardy, I was going to say, or, you know,
I've never seen a Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah, well, Fatty was great, especially at parties. But I mean, if you're going to make a pantheon of like the great 70s comedians, I think if you've got your Mount Rushmore with Monty Python in there, you've got to put Firesign Theater right next to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll believe that forever because this is truly some of the best comedic writing anybody will ever see. And it's 40 years old.
Yeah. God, that's insane. Well, yeah. Jeremy Guskin.
Yes.
I would like to thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. I hope I didn't yak too much.
No, that's what we needed, because again, I know nothing
about it. I invited you to talk about something I know nothing about.
I think Mike said 20 words so far. They were all funny. They were choice.
And he was on research.
You're not here?
I was at the limit.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Now you got me up to 25.
He was gesticulating. He wanted to keep it down.
I'm so sorry, Mike. I apologize. Well, this has been episode 6? Yeah, episode 6 of Comedy on Vinyl. Again, thank you to Jeremy Guskin. And thank you to Mike Warden.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yay.
Bottom just got off the chain.
Comedy on Vinyl is recorded at Fort Awesome Studios in Burbank, California. Go to comedyonvinyl.com to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. Our producer is Mike Warden, and our editor is Jason Klom. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. To see what else we're up to, go to stolendress.com and look at our podcasts, our books, our blogs, our videos, and anything else that might strike your fancy. And if stolendress.com is too long for you, you can always go to goo.gl/YSQZF.
Goodbye. I'm away for the holiday.